Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
A Liverpool trio, I should have said. 3-0 up, Salah with that penalty in the last few moments. Second half well underway now across Europe in those 8 o'clock games. Barcelona 1-0 up still on Inter, 55 minutes gone. Napoli still 1-0 up on PSG in Liverpool's group. Galatasaray and Schalke 0-0. Lokomotiv Moscow 1, Porto 3 in Group D. And Group A already, Monaco, Thierry Henry's Monaco, 1-1 draw away to Bruges. And it's Borussia Dortmund 1-0 up on Atletico Madrid, 52 minutes gone in that game. Dortmund 1-0 up on Atletico. Witzel with the goal on 38 minutes. Later on, we'll talk to Martin Lipton about Spurs primarily. He's also keeping an eye on Liverpool. It's a fairly routine evening for Liverpool thus far. Was probably always going to be. But Spurs, big disappointment for them. We'll talk to Martin Lipton later on. Miguel Delaney, meanwhile, was at Old Trafford last night. Juve, quite brilliant, as we've discussed already on the show. Totally outclassed Manchester United, especially in that first half. Something that Jose Mourinho was not shying away from in his post-match press conference.
We play against one of the biggest, really biggest candidates to win the Champions League. And we did the possible. We could get a different result, especially because of the way we played in the second half. We didn't, especially because Mr. Bonucci, Mr. Chiellini, they could go to some Harvard University to give classes about how to be a center defender. Fantastic, absolutely fantastic. He's a team that has everything. They have talent everywhere. Of course, Cristiano, Dybala, the talent they have in attack, and they go for the best players in the world. So big, big club with a big past, but with a big desire to have also a big future. And they put everything there. Everything they put there to try to win, I don't say the Champions League, I think to win the treble. That's what they want, because normally they win at home. But the treble until now, unfortunately for these fellows in the other side, is our treble, not that treble. Yet, I think they are really close to do it. To go to the Juventus level, yeah. Barcelona level, yeah. Real Madrid level, how can you reach that level? Man City level, how can you reach this level? It's not also easy. It's not also easy, because many of the players they belong to these top teams. So we work what we have. We try to improve what we have.
So that was Jose Mourinho. Meanwhile, Rio Ferdinand and Paul Scholes, his good friends, were on BT Sport.
If you was having to describe this game in a short and sharp way, you'd say men against boys. If I'm honest, I thought Juventus were far superior all throughout. In every department of the game, from their shape, the way they applied themselves, the intensity, the quality on the ball, where there was a huge difference between the two sides in terms of quality on the ball, the calmness in possession, the understanding of the game management, and they were well-deserved winners today.
Tactically, much superior as well, would you say, Paul?
Yeah, they looked a team who've been playing together for some time, and you know, they have brought some new players into it. But as Rio said, they were a class above, technically, tactically. They were just a step above from Man United today. And you know, the sad thing is, it feels like there's a bit of an acceptance to it, really, from not just from United, from the players, but I think from the fans also. I think it seems where we're at the minute, there doesn't seem to be an improvement in performance over into his third year now. And you see Juventus, they look like a team who could go on to win the Champions League, and United, they're going to have to improve massively to get anywhere near.
Yeah, so fair consensus there. Miguel Delaney was there for the London Independent. Miguel, what did you make of it all?
It was a 1-0 that basically could have been a 4 or 5-0. And I know this has come up a lot in the time since the game, about the 96-97 match in Turin, but I thought there was an even bigger gap between the teams than there was that night, which so many United players have described as kind of, you know, one of a massive learning experience, one of the most chastening experiences of the career. But of course, the difference then was, and this is relevant to Mourinho's kind of typically face-saving post-match press conference, the difference then was that Juventus were the wealthier side, bringing in the best players in the world, and United were kind of on a young team on a learning curve. Now, United's revenue is double Juventus's. Mourinho's reign started with taking their most expensive and commercially valuable player to kind of widen that gap. And yet, then we had last night, in which Juventus were just so comfortable. And Michael Cox made a good point I saw, where this Juventus team have kind of progressed in Europe, mostly through being tactically clever, not really kind of through completely dominating teams in the way you would have seen Barcelona, Real Madrid, Guardiola's Bayern. But they did that to United last night.
Mm. There was a speed and variation and crispness about their passing in the first half in particular, which was just really impressive. I mean, I was watching it and thinking, well, Manchester United are going to be accused of being passive here. You'd have to be really good pressing side to knock Juve off their stride when they were in that kind of form last night. Like, they are a really, really good team as well, we should say.
But this is a problem, actually. I did a piece in this last week about kind of the growth of pressing, especially with Sarri and Klopp, and how, you know, the new battleground in the game is basically how these managers respond to how the other team press. But and I was reading one of the UEFA reports from last season, and it keeps coming up, basically, Mourinho just doesn't press. He doesn't press high.
Yeah.
So even if it would have been difficult to do that event, this United didn't even try.
Yeah.
And it does point to this wider argument about whether he's out of date or past his best. But I think there's so many issues at United now that Juventus helped kind of crystallise. Like, Mourinho went on a bit of a rant after. Well, not a rant, like, to be fair. It was, you know, more calculated excuse-making explanation.
Yeah.
Where he talked about how Juventus have ambition to go for the best. And while there are big questions to be asked about how he's invested money or how he's brought money into that squad or brought players into that squad and what he's done with the money he's been given, there is one fair point he could make, which is Juventus kind of spend their money with much more direction, much more kind of, I suppose, focus.
Mm.
Whereas United don't. It's obviously been this disagreement between Woodward and himself.
Yeah, it is one of the great subplots, and it's been played out. I guess you could boil it down to Gary Neville on Sky Sports taking repeated pot shots at the board and at Woodward versus the Scholes and Rio double team on BT Sport, where they're pretty focused on Mourinho most of the time. And that's the big picture, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I think both could be true.
Yeah, I mean, that is the worry for Manchester United fans, that potentially the game has passed Mourinho by to some degree. I mean, I think it's disrespectful for any of us to say totally, obviously, but to some degree, maybe it has. And then also true is the fact that at board level, they've spent £1 billion and, frankly, are no closer than they were 5 years ago when poor old David Moyes got his comeuppance. And suddenly the David Moyes era doesn't look so bad. I mean, like, the Van Gaal era, frankly, from a spending point of view, was fairly shameful, and it hasn't really improved that much.
Yeah.
The Sanchez one is starting to look like, the Torres of the 2018.
And again, Mourinho specifically brought up getting to City's level last night, but Sanchez was one of two players this year that United beat City to.
Yeah.
The other one obviously being Fred. So, I mean, it rings a bit hollow there. Someone was telling me recently, and I think this maybe came across last night, and it came across maybe the first half of the Newcastle game and a few games this season.
Mm.
One of the United players was basically bemoaning the fact that he reckons some of the squad, or maybe a lot of the squad, are basically, there's almost a little bit of paralysis about playing at Old Trafford now, because there's not, you know, the pressure is such, the situation is such, that it kind of seizes them a bit. And I think that came across last night.
Yeah.
I mean, the fear factor used to be in the opposite direction, and it's now with their own players.
Yeah. Like, there's such a lack of coordination about their play, even when they have the ball, whatever about the passivity when they don't. And it's almost an achievement in itself to have a team with Rashford, Lukaku, Martial, Mata, Paul Pogba and a team and be so impotent. It's actually, it's almost impressive in a bizarre way.
That's exactly it. I mean, I remember there was one moment at the end of the first half, which kind of summed it up, where you actually had the ball right back. Any other modern team now, you'd see actually try and construct a play. What he did was basically just lump the ball straight up for Lukaku, who was barely moving. I mean, I think Mourinho rightfully went on about how good Bonucci and Chiellini were after the game. But, and even allowing for that, though, they kind of had too many easier games, like, against what is supposed to be one of the world's super clubs. Because, I mean, Lukaku's become a bit of a problem. And to be fair, Mourinho did concede this last night. He said he's not in a sweet moment. He's low on confidence. But even beyond that, it's the lack of movement from Lukaku that's really... And that's kind of... comes back to Mourinho as well, because his traditional approach in that has been basically having a big striker you can get the ball up to, which again feels out of date.
It does a touch. And even Pat Nevin, when the signing was made, he's on here pretty regularly, Pat Nevin, he had watched a lot of Lukaku at Goodison, and he really was worried. He really felt there are days where Lukaku, for whatever reason, does not move. Just difficult at times to get him in the right frame of mind. I don't know why. You made an interesting point a couple of weeks ago. Effectively, I suppose you said there is potentially the complete lack of connection between Mourinho and the squad, his hard edge management ironically making the team so soft, so easily beatable. You said this just isn't a group of players enthralled to him. They don't all dislike him, but he's lost a lot of them, and it has also meant losing so many games. And that, maybe, I suppose, is the big difference between Mourinho at Manchester United and Mourinho at so many of his previous clubs. Yeah. They are not enthralled to him.
Yeah, well, basically, it was all of Mourinho's squads, essentially up to 2010, were enthralled to him. Then he had his career peak at Inter. And I think, it's amazing how often we come back to the same conversation about Mourinho, but I think it's still so relevant. I think in 2010, he was basically at a peak. You know, maybe got to that point where managers, you do wonder whether, in making their name, they obviously got to push themselves to the limit and do everything that's necessary. But then once they get to that peak, it's almost, I suppose you see it in so many walks, but they just think them doing their thing is enough rather than actually doing what made them great.
Yeah.
And then you get to Madrid, and it's the first squad that, it's the first squad that basically has that sense of entitlement. I mean, because, you know, he brought Porto from, he made Porto European champions, which shouldn't have been possible. He won Chelsea their first title in 50 years, got Inter their first Champions League in four decades, and it's something that should have been possible in Italy then either. So there's a sense of kind of helping a lot of these players to be what they hadn't been. Whereas in Real Madrid, you know, the key players in the squad had just won the World Cup, you know, some of the greatest champions in the game, some of the most self-entitled players in the game, and they weren't really interested in what, they didn't like his tactics, didn't like his approach, and that was the first time it was tested. And it feels like since then, something's been kind of broken. Like, we've seen the same pattern repeat at Madrid, at Chelsea, and now United. One difference between United and Chelsea and Madrid now is that, I mean, Madrid was completely broken. At Chelsea was worse, I suppose, with that kind of brought to an idea by the Eva Carneiro incident. So we haven't had anything like that yet to completely break the connection between him and United. I think that's why, to be fair to him, we have seen responses in recent games that you wouldn't have seen at Chelsea in 2015-16. But I mean, I've heard some from so many people now that basically the United, a lot of that United squad wouldn't be too bothered if he left.
The other interesting thing about 2010, it was was the almost even a few years before that, but like though that rather grim period for football was most decidedly and definitely coming to an end, and we had what Pep was doing, and then we had high pressing coming quickly on the back of it. You know, so Samuel Eto'o as a plucky, hardworking Dirk Kuyt right winger was all very well, but it feels very much of its time now. And we look at what Man United are doing with the ball, and see, the question I have in my head is, was Mourinho ever a good attacking coach? But then I get flashes of Duff and Robin at Chelsea, and I think, well, there was obviously something there. But you do wonder why he can't get these very quality attacking players going.
I think there's probably two things. First of all, I think he was at his peak in an era where he basically defined what was dominant in football.
Yes.
It was that kind of control football that him and Rafa Benitez practiced. There was no kind of defensive organisation, and which was kind of paramount. And if you look at the stats alone, I mean, the goal averages in the Champions League were so much lower then. And basically, I mean, someone actually who's quite high up in hockey recently pointed this out to me. He said, if you actually look at the history of both sports, it is amazing the way there's such a difference between how hockey teams have, you know, the intensity which they've been coordinated compared to football teams. They were basically kind of left to their own devices, particularly in terms of pressing. And that's only come in the last few years in football, which is amazing given you know, how evolved football is as a sport. But that's basically what happened with Guardiola in 2008-09. And even in all these UEFA technical reports and manuals, they describe it as the Guardiola effect. Yeah. But that, it was basically just an explosion in the game. The encouragement of more expansive, proactive football and pressing. And it did kind of just blow that old kind of 2004-2007 football away a bit.
He must sense it as well. I guess the third strand between the board and Mourinho himself, and I guess his place in football and where it is. The third strand is his own motivation. You know, it must be pretty galling when you realise, well, you're not at your peak anymore, and potentially teams like Juve are coming and all these patterns are happening around you, and you kind of realise maybe my ship has sailed. And he has looked glum for a fairly high percentage of his time at Manchester United. At the club he dreamt about managing, the club he aspired to manage, it was the holy grail for him, and he got there, and maybe he just got there too late, because he just never looks in charge of himself the way he once was.
I mean, I've heard from people that kind of know him as well, that just wonder about how much it eats away at him, basically, to not be the bright young thing anymore, because he really reveled in that role. He loved it. And to be fair to him, that was when, I mean, now when he plays a lot of his media games, there's kind of a bit too much, feels like there's a bit too much malice to it. Whereas before, he used to be mischievous and kind of have more sense of fun. Mm. But I suppose everything's more fun when you're not going to, when you're winning everything.
And when you're young, and when you're so handsome, and when you're the shiny new thing and everyone loves you. I mean, it's just a different world.
Completely, completely. And that's like, I do wonder how much, well, I've heard he does like Pochettino, but how much he resents the fact that Klopp, Pochettino, Guardiola, all these managers, even to an extent, so is Marco Silva, who he plays this weekend, are talked in the way that he used to be, whereas he'd see without his winning record. And I think it's so symbolic in so many ways, not just in the way he intends, that his main response to everything these days is holding up those three fingers, be it for the titles he's won or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just not clinging to the past.
I think it was Jonathan Wells, I'm not sure, but someone was wondering today, maybe it's the three for the three players, the measly three players I've signed this season. There's so many trees that could be going on. Yeah. I suppose as we try and predict an end game, there's, again, it's a very complicated picture. There's a whole number of strands. So there's the atmosphere in Old Trafford, which at the moment is surprisingly, I think, stoic, you know, and Didier Mann was on RTE last night, genuinely wondering how Manchester United fans are not booing the team off almost at this stage. There's Mourinho's own motivation to keep going and how much he wants to cling on. And then there is the Woodward board decision to make, because if they do sack him, one, there's the financial cost, which they can stomach, I presume. But that then suddenly shines all of that Gary Neville spotlight onto them.
Yeah.
They've had to sack another manager. Who are you going to hire? And then are you going to give that manager a truckload of money as well to spend and shape his own image? Or will it be a director of football? And who's that going to be? So how this all plays out is actually quite difficult to predict. I mean, they could keep bumping along in a fairly ordinary way. And the board may say, well, this keeps the heat off us if he can just hang in there for a bit longer.
I mean, I suppose to the most relevant aspect there, I've heard that one thing that has saved them so far, beyond the fact that results haven't gone truly terminal in the way they threatened to the day the Newcastle win, is that basically there's no real viable replacement. I don't think they'll get Zidane, because Zidane would want full control of transfers. I think he's a bit reticent about that squad. Mm. And that seems to have died down a bit. The ideal is Pochettino, but they're never going to get him mid-season, and it's even dubious whether they'll get him at the end of the season. So that's kind of kept Mourinho there. And I do think he'll get to a situation where it'll kind of grind through until the end of the season. Then we probably will see change. Just because, you know, the amount of dissatisfaction there in all corners. But of course, unless basically we see another Chelsea situation and it really plummets. But I don't think that'll happen. I think we just grind through. Mm. In terms of the fans, it's interesting. I think one thing that Mourinho has still been really successful at, probably still the best in the game at, is this almost Trumpian quality, the way he appeals to the support base, goes on about fake news and how the media are wrong. And I think he's got a positive reaction towards him from the fans precisely because of that.
Mm. And what about the players then? Are they just happy? I mean, they're not going to down tools in a Chelsea-esque way. They're going to keep bubbling along as well.
Yeah, I think that's basically the case. Yeah, I think there's enough professional pride there, as we saw in the Newcastle game and the Chelsea. And that's kind of saving them for the moment. But then it's an indictment, and it comes back to last night, I suppose, as well, that in these two games that were seen ultimately as positives, it needed United to go behind to kind of bring a bit of spark there, to bring what United should be.
Yeah.
But while that was possible against, you know, a team as bad as Newcastle and a defence that is exposed as Chelsea because of the way they play, it wasn't going to happen against Juventus.
Yeah.
And it shows how unsustainable this is.
Yeah, it really does. So it's sort of a few problem children we mentioned in there. The Lukaku not scoring in 8 goals. Sanchez may well have just run himself into the ground. That may be just him done. I didn't think Pogba was terrible last night, but invariably he's such a lightning rod for all criticism. What other issues does he have? So, that, like Pogba, I'd be interested for your thoughts on where Pogba is. And then when you look at the rest of that team, I mean, who realistically should and will be there in 2-3 years time if they're pushing for a title? There's not a huge number of names actually jumping forward.
Well, but the thing is though, we often get this kind of when, you know, especially in the debate about Mourinho, I suppose, and maybe compared to Guardiola, you know, or who from that squad would you keep? Who'd get in somewhere else? But the thing is, basically, some of these players can look completely transformed under different managers.
Yeah.
And I have to say that United's got, especially the attackers you listed off earlier, if Guardiola was in charge of them, I think they'd look just as good. You can imagine Pogba being almost a De Bruyne. Mm. But I mean, as regards Pogba, I've repeatedly heard Mourinho doesn't really know how to handle him, both in terms of how to manage him because there's no connection between them, and secondly, in terms of where to put him on a pitch because they just never seem to. When it goes right for them with Pogba, it only seems to ever last one or two games, and we're back to the same old problems.
Yeah,
like last night. But a connected problem to that is Matic, who basically a lot of opposition teams have realised he's there to be got at. He's slow. He's not quick enough getting the ball out, and Juventus really targeted that last night. Mm. But he's one of Mourinho's main lieutenants, one of the untouchables almost.
And are we consigning Fred to just being a failure, a flop already at 50 million plus?
This is a guy that Mourinho badly wanted. He was another description from someone within the club at the time was another player to unlock Pogba, the third or fourth now. And yeah, you do have to wonder to a certain where a little bit like Sanchez was part of the reason to sign him, basically just because City wanted him as well.
Yeah, I guess the spectre of Guardiola and City hangs over the whole thing as well. So if you sum up, it's clear you have a few sources here and there in the club and you get a feel for what's going on. Is everybody a little bit miserable and aware that actually this thing long-term under Mourinho is a bit hopeless? Like the end is going to come before they reach the Premier League summit again, and they all kind of know that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. Yeah. And I suppose it was almost symbolised with the way they ultimately didn't fully back him in the summer window. Yeah. And maybe Mourinho has a legitimate grievance there because, you know, he's a sort of manager. If you're going to put him in, you've got to go full gun with him. Whereas United didn't. But then I suppose the counter argument is he hasn't done a lot with the player he's signed so far, so you can understand why they'd be somewhat reticent.
No, and even
as regards that, there was like, this is typical of, I suppose, how Mourinho kind of plays with these situations and kind of face saves. He mentioned Bonucci, basically, but he mentioned Bonucci and Ronaldo, name check both.
Yeah.
As the reasons Juventus have more ambition than United. And I suppose with the undercurrent as well, Benici's 31 and Ronaldo's 33, so that Woodward would never have sanctioned deals players at all. Well, that's not true. The issue with a centre-half in the summer was if they're going to spend money, it had to be on someone better than they had, which I suppose someone like Harry Maguire wasn't. They would have spent on Benucci. He's even admitted himself the United are after him, but he only wanted to go back to the Juventus. And also, Juventus got that deal done basically through a swap for Higuain. Ronaldo, from what I've heard, before he went to Juventus, obviously given the connection and given what's happened between two clubs over the past few seasons, this has been such a theme for the past few years, that Mendes went to United first, offering them Ronaldo and wondering could a deal be done. Woodward, of course, was interested, but maybe was a little bit more reticent than previous summers because of how many times they've had their fingers burnt at that and how many times Ronaldo used them for a contract, basically. But he would have been open to it just because of the commercial value. But the story I heard was that Mourinho vetoed it because of you can sign Ronaldo, but it's not coming out of my transfer budget. So,
what budget is it going to come out of?
Yeah.
I'd love to see in a parallel universe what a 2008 to 2010 Mourinho would do with this current United crop.
Yeah.
Even if he came in right now, manager sacked, he comes in, they could still win the bloody Champions League under him. He might find a way, but it's not happening now. And
this is the thing. You'd have to. Like, it should surely be at least more intensity about the team.
Yeah. So that came across on TV. That was the sense in the stadium there last night as well.
Completely, yeah. And even thinking, when you're writing reports like that, especially at 1-0, at 75 minutes, you've got to go for 90, you're always going to hedge your bets a bit because, one lucky goal, it changes everything, changes the tone of everything. But last night, even though I was kind of writing, fully confident Juve would win because I just didn't think United were going to get anything out of it. They couldn't lay a glove on them.
Yeah. No, it was an extraordinary gulf. It really was. Miguel, we'll be reading your work as usual in the London Independent. Thanks a million for joining us. Appreciate it. Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers, Joe. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. So a busy few moments in the life of Mane. He missed a penalty for Liverpool. Keeper saved it, tipped it off the crossbar. But a few moments later, Mane did manage to score. So it's now Liverpool 4, Red Star Belgrade 0. Also in Group C, Napoli 2, Paris Saint-Germain 1. So Napoli went 1-0 up early on in this game. Then not much happened for a while until an equaliser, an own goal, came on the hour mark. But Dries Mertens has put them back 2-1 up in Paris. What that means in Liverpool's group then is that Napoli will go from 4 points to 7 points. Liverpool will move to 6 points and Paris Saint-Germain stay on 3 points as I make it. Yes, 3 points. So interesting. Napoli 7 points, Liverpool 6 points and PSG stay on 3 points. That one is far from done. Elsewhere this evening, Barcelona against Inter Milan have just gone 2-0 up. So that's Barcelona moving to 9 points. Inter stay on 6. Jordi Alba with the goal on 83 minutes. Rafinha scored the opener for Barca on 32. So that means in Group B, it's going to be Barca 9, Inter 6, and Spurs stay on 1 point. Obviously, 1 point after this evening's draw against PSV, also on 1 point. So 1 point for 3 games for Spurs in Group B. With that in mind, Martin Lipton from The Sun is standing by. Evening, Martin.
Good evening.
So this has been a group of regrets for Spurs this season, not least the Inter Milan game where they conceded twice in the final 5 minutes to lose 2-1. And then this evening to top it all off. 1 point from three, that's probably it done, barring a fairly impressive finish to this group for them.
They've got to win the last three games and I can't see them beating Barcelona, so I think it's good night, nurse. If they'd won tonight, then all they had to, is to beat PSV and beat Inter by 1-0 or more than one goal, and they'd have gone through. But as it is now, they're completely up against it, shall we say. And to be honest, if those two away games, they should never have lost in Inter. They should easily have won tonight. And they've ended up with 1 point from two matches. It's their own fault, not taking chances. I mean, they destroyed PSG and everything that matters. PSV rather.
Yeah.
And everything that matters, except the one thing that really matters, which is goals. I mean, they didn't take. They were 2-1 up, cruising. Kane should score the header. You could argue that Lamela should do better when he hits the bar as well. Admittedly, the goal in the first half was one of the worst decisions you'll ever see, the disallowed goal. Completely wrong. Scandalous decision and proof that VAR is long overdue. With VAR, that's a goal. England and Spurs win the match. But they made too many mistakes. Alderweireld for the first goal and then Lloris getting himself sent off. You could argue with Lloris, actually, that that was a wrong decision.
Pochettino said it wasn't a red card.
He wasn't denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity because Lozano had already missed with the chance.
Yeah. Pochettino
said
that afterwards.
So it should have been a yellow card.
Yeah.
But it's just a stupid, bad decision, and he paid the price for it.
This is not an inexperienced Spurs side to slip up twice in Europe like this. What do you put it down to?
They haven't played well all season. They've been rubbish. They got 21 points, and I don't know how, from nine games. They haven't played yet. They haven't played all season. They've been very... Today, actually, was probably their most impressive performance, apart from the result. Because they played... When they stepped up again, Eriksen played really well, caused all sorts of problems. They were in complete command and control until they gave away a soft goal. Well, you know, it's your own fault then. Take your chances.
Yeah.
But actually, they haven't played well at any point in the season.
Yeah, so it's quite impressive then they're just 2 points off City and Liverpool. If they ditch their European exploits, which it looks like they will pretty soon, then, I mean, they could make a run at the league if they actually start playing. Why aren't they playing well? I'm trying to cheer you up.
A bit tired.
Tired.
At the moment, I think there's a lot, you know, post-World Cup, is taking this stuff. Look, also, to be fair to them, the last few games, they played without four of their best five players.
Yeah.
You know, and they look better, brighter today with Eriksen, Dembele, albeit I'm not sure how much you're ever going to get two games out of Dembele on the run. You're missing, they're missing Vertonghen, they're missing Ali. Son hasn't really played all season for a variety of reasons, and Kane, despite scoring 7 goals, which tells you how good he is actually, still hasn't played absolutely as well as he can. I thought he played really well for England last week. And he could easily have scored 3 or 4 today, in truth. I mean, he was nearly there, but it's not quite coming off for him. And you do know with Kane that it will, because he is, as I said, if he can score seven without playing well, what's going to be like when he does start playing well? So that's the positive. But, I mean, they're so far behind City and I think Liverpool as well that they're not going to be in the same competition. I think the proof of that will be Monday night at Wembley when City will show Spurs how far behind they are.
And why are you so resigned to the fact that they're not going to suddenly click into gear?
Well, I just think they look a bit leggy. I think they're just sometimes it's just not right. I think there's all sorts of issues ongoing. I think the uncertainty about the stadium hasn't helped. Where they're going to be playing, I think they've done really well despite the fact they haven't played a home game for 18 months. And I don't know. I just think there's some things a little bit. I think they need to strengthen. They've just done with a couple of new bodies, albeit that Moura and Lamela effectively are new faces because they didn't play very much at all last season, and Winks was out for most of last season. So it's not as if they're suffering for numbers, but they could just have done with a little bit more freshness in the squad, I think, and an extra option up front. They haven't got that. They are, at the moment, a little bit one-dimensional, in truth.
Yeah, which is not what we've become accustomed to. I must admit, if I'm Pochettino's agent, I'm saying, buddy, you've done all you can here.
Well, he's got 4 years left on his contract.
Well, that's not worth
anything. And Daniel Levy won't let him go.
Well, he'll have to let him go. Even Daniel Levy will have to let him go if in, 8 months' time, Real Madrid are still a mess and they come calling.
No, I think he'll want to do a full season at the new stadium first.
Okay.
I think that's where it is with him and Kane and Ali, actually. I think they all want to do a proper season, one full season at the new stadium. And then I suspect they may start to think of their options.
Yeah.
Albeit, I don't think Kane wants to leave. I don't think Kane wants to play for anybody else. I think he's mad, but I don't think he wants to play for anyone else.
Yeah. So is a Champions League spot about the best Spurs fans can hope for this season?
All season they've been playing for fourth, as far as I'm concerned. Right. I mean, they were playing for fourth last season and came third.
Yeah.
But I think Liverpool and City are way better than the rest. Chelsea are third best, comfortably, but not if they lose Eden Hazard for 3 months. Because they are heavily reliant on him. Arsenal, Spurs, I thought the start of the season and United were playing for one place. I'm not sure about United anymore, but Arsenal and Spurs, I think, are playing for fourth with Chelsea if they slip off a little bit. But that's not a terrible thing. I mean, you know, someone's got to be fifth. It might be Tottenham. If it is, so be it. They might come third.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, look, they could suddenly start to play in some real form, not playing in Europe if they were to come bottom of the group. And, you know, do it that way. I mean, Arsenal won the double in 98 because they got knocked out of Europe in September. That was a long time ago, though.
Perverse as it is to say it, Spurs are better off finishing bottom and being without the Europa League.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I would happily just give up on the Europa League, play the reserves and get knocked out, personally, rather than play proper teams. Because you've got to win four knockout games just to get to the final. My word, I just watched Dortmund score another goal in against Atletico, which is rather bizarre. I think unless you're going to win it, which is going to be really tough, there's not much point in being in it.
Yeah.
Whereas the Champions League, it's the financial value of being in it makes it worthwhile.
Martin, you've cheered up Spurs fans everywhere. Thanks so much for coming on.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.